This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't it equal?
This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm here in the studio with the show's producer, Carrie Jr. II.
Good day, Stephen.
Hey, Carrie.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How much of the Democratic Convention have you been watching so far?
I've seen mostly kind of the clips from the earlier part. I tuned in a little bit more for Governor Tim Walz's speech. So just hearing a little bit about the messaging and learning more about what the star-studded convention, I should say. They've got a lot of heavy hitters, former politicians that they've got attending, but that's pretty much it. How about yourself?
Yeah, I've been paying pretty close attention.
Yeah.
I mean, the conventions, many years I would be there, watching more closely at both conventions. This year, I have decided not to go. I heard from someone yesterday that the bus ride down to the convention took 2.5 hours.
Oh, wow.
Because of all the logistics and stuff. I mean, these are much bigger events than they used to be. I don't care for all of that kind of rigmarole, so that's why I don't go anymore.
The rigmarole.
But I am paying a pretty close attention to what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I think the word that pops into mind when I think about the convention this week is energy. There's
yeah.
a lot of momentum
lot.
That they seem to feel in the convention hall. That's maybe a little more intense than it is in some other years.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, once they had the candidate switch and President Biden withdrew and Kamala Harris joined, we saw the initial enthusiasm from the party itself about rallying around Vice President Harris. And then it's kind of just kind of swelled into, like rolled right into this convention as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when you have former President Obama, Michelle Obama speaking on Tuesday, you have, you know, Kenan Thompson coming out doing a comedic rendition and interpretation of Project 2025. You kind of just, they're like leaning fully into the whole moment right now. I am curious how much this will continue to stretch all the way out till November if the GOP side, the Republican side, and the Trump and Vance campaign has some type of alternative to neutralize this, to get the attention back and enthusiasm back on their side. But yeah, it's been a very energetic week for sure.
Yeah. And aside from that energy, I mean, you have some specific tasks at conventions like this. I mean, number one, you are introducing your candidates on a bigger stage than in many cases they have been before. That's certainly true for Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who is a pretty new face to a lot of people. He got his chance to talk to the delegates last night. But for Kamala Harris, who is the current vice president, it's not so much about introducing herself as it is about distinguishing herself, right? Distinguishing herself from Donald Trump, of course, who would be her opponent in the fall, but also trying to draw a little distance, I think, from President Joe Biden and the parts of his performance over the last 4 years that have not been terribly popular. This struggle with inflation, the criticism, the sharp criticism over immigration, and of course the current war in Gaza, which has split the Democratic Party pretty profoundly. You know, how does she handle those things, I think, is what's kind of hanging over the convention. And that's what we want to talk about today is what's happened so far in Chicago and what we expect as Kamala Harris gets ready to address the delegates later today. And we've got three really great guests with us to help us do that. Who do we have with us today, Carrie?
We have James Zogby. He is the president and co-founder of the Arab American Institute. And we're also joined by Shika Dalmia. She is the president of the Institute of the Study of Modern Authoritarianism. She's also the editor-in-chief of the free Substack publication, The Unpopulist. And then we're also joined by Andrea Bitely. She is the former spokesperson, for former Michigan Attorney General Bill Schuette and is currently the political and communication strategist at Bitely Communications. So a nice, nice lineup for you.
Yes. Let's get to it.
All
right, James, Sheikah, and Andrea, it's great to have all three of you here with us on The Created Equal. Welcome to the show. James, I want to start with you. And, of course, this is the first time I've got you here with us, with our listeners here in Detroit. But I'm really curious, given your long track record in Washington, in politics, in many cases in Democratic politics, what you think of what we're seeing in Chicago. What has been your take on what Democrats are achieving this week at the convention?
Well, I think you pretty much summed it up in the opening. There is energy and excitement that was drained, I think, during the last few weeks of the Biden candidacy. People were feeling quite nervous about where this was going to go and didn't want to spend the next 3 months worried about whether or not he'd make a verbal gaffe or trip on stage or something. It was starting to look like, I say this, people don't remember what I mean. It was starting to look like Warren Spahn, who stayed in the game just a little too long.
Too long, right.
And hurt his legacy. Joe Biden did the right thing, stepped out. There was excitement and energy, and it has sustained itself during the convention. There's no question about that. And people are, I think, falling in love with Tim Walz. He seems to be quite a wonderful addition to the ticket. Hmm. The issue of Gaza, however, continues to haunt the campaign, mm-hmm. haunt the country, mm-hmm. and while I think the vice president understands it and has made clear that she does, I think the campaign made an unforced error by not finding space in the program for a speaker. It could have been 3 minutes, could mm-hmm. have been 2 minutes, mm-hmm. But there wasn't any. And I think the demonstrators outside the convention right now, the uncommitted folks are doing a sit-in, and some people accuse them of being petulant. I don't think that's the case. I think that there is an issue here of wanting humanity affirmed. Mm. There was a very powerful presentation by the Israeli parents of a hostage, and it's something that we all can, those of us who are parents, can feel strongly about. Sure. I mean, this is terrible. But there are 40,000 plus Palestinians who've died, mm-hmm. and there are Palestinian Americans who have a story to tell. The Harris campaign did create a forum in the convention, a side program. Myself and
Keith Ellison,
Attorney General Keith Ellison, yeah. chaired it.
Another Detroiter, of course.
Yes, yeah. And it was a recognition that was important, but it wasn't the main stage, and literally every ethnic group I can imagine has been represented on the main stage, and Arab Americans were not. I think I was the last Arab American to speak from a Democratic convention, and that was 1988.
Wow.
When I spoke on behalf of the Jackson campaign.
Yeah.
But 36 years is a pretty big dry spell.
That's a long time.
And given what's going on, it would have been a no-brainer. And because Michigan's important, and because this issue has crossed over beyond Arab Americans to include young voters and Black, Latino, and Asian voters, not all, but a significant enough percentage that it should be there. It should be there, and yeah. it wouldn't have hurt at all to invite a Palestinian American, especially some of those from California who are very close to the vice president, whom she knows and who she respects and who've worked with her since she was attorney general, would have been a no-brainer. And I never understand when campaigns make unforced errors and simply can't recognize it.
So, Jim, I wonder what you think the potential consequences here for this. So here's the way I think the campaign has been looking at this, that with the switch from Biden to Harris, they get a couple of things that they think give them a little room on this issue. One is the rhetoric, right? She talks about this in a different way than the president does. She is more willing to acknowledge what Israel is doing is not acceptable and has said some pretty tough things about that. But the other thing I feel like the campaign feels like it gained with her is, of course, the fact that she's an African-American woman. And in places like Michigan, the worry is not just about, the strong presence of Arab-American voters. It's about getting black voters out in Detroit, and in particular, African-American women. They are not going to have a problem with that, with Kamala Harris on the ticket. And so in some ways, are they saying, well, we can take the hit from the Arab American community, and because we're going to make up for it by what is likely going to be an overvote, right, in Detroit? Is that's maybe a cynical way to look at it, but that seems to me like what some of the calculus looks like.
Well, I sure hope it's not, because it's cynical as all get out. You want everybody on the bus. You want to you don't want to leave votes behind. And look, if Biden dropping out and Harris coming in gave her a 10-point sort of spurt, I'd say, well, that's the calculation. But it's just as damn close as it was when when he was in. Mm-hmm. And we're still having an election on the margins, and beyond the calculation here, there's a question of the feeling of disrespect of a community that has been through a horrific, and is continuing to be through a horrific challenge. And she was sitting as vice president while it was going on. And I've spoken with her, and I know she gets it. I know how deeply pained she was. But I say that to the community, and they say, yeah, but we needed our humanity affirmed, and it didn't get affirmed. And so, because it would have been so easy to do, I didn't want to see both sides lock themselves into a position where at some point somebody was going to have to say uncle and back down.
Yeah.
Didn't have to happen. It still doesn't have to happen. There's got to be a way in the 10 hours or so that still are in front of us for us to come up with a formula that says we both can win and without losing face. And frankly, having a Palestinian voice on that stage or some other way we find to figure this out is not going to cost her any votes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's nobody in the Jewish community who's voting for Kamala Harris right now who's going to say, oh, my God, she recognized the humanity of Palestinians. I'm not voting for her. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But there are some votes you might lose by not recognizing that humanity. And it's not that they're going to vote for Donald Trump. They're not. Right. And there's some of the responses to some tweets that I did. I guess you're not supposed to call them tweets anymore, but whatever the hell you call them.
I don't know what you call them.
You know, you're all Hamas people or whatever. And there's just sheer bigotry. The reaction is bigotry. There's nobody saying you shouldn't have a Palestinian speak because of some reason other than the fact that I hate Palestinians and you people aren't human and you're all Hamas supporters. That's the stuff they're saying. If the campaign wants to snuff that out, if it wants to create a situation where they say there's humanity on both sides, then let's figure out a way to do it and just get it done and put it behind us so that we don't end up in a situation where we say, gosh, if only we had. And it's not, like I said, it's not just a question of victory. It's not just a question of bringing votes to the table. It's a question of starting off an administration with on the right foot.
Yeah, right. There's a moral imperative here that
right,
is
and a political imperative in the sense that why end up being in a defensive position when you don't have to be? You're riding high. You're sitting in a good place right now. Don't make any errors that you don't have to make.
Yeah, yeah. Andrea and Shika, I want to bring you into the conversation here. Andrea, you are a Republican, and so I'm super curious about how you have taken in all the things that are happening in Chicago this week. What do you make of the case the Democrats are making to the American people?
Yeah, I think they're making a case that they are the rational, normal party. Shika's laughing, but yes, it's the case that is being brought forward. Quite honestly, Tim Walz's speech last night with his football players, and the lead-in and his beautiful wife and his children. It felt like Norman Rockwell-esque. It felt very highly patriotic in a way that, as a Republican since I was a child, I feel like we used to be like that. And it has moved over to the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has embraced the USA chants, USA banners, a red, white, and blue love thy neighbor attitude. It's a very different Democratic Party than we've seen in past years. The anger from past Democratic events has sort of transferred to the Republican Party. And the Democrats have really gone about this in a positive, patriotic way.
Yeah. Well, so I was really interested when Tim Walz was talking last night at the things he kept returning to that that we're going to connect with just really average voters. The number of times he used the word neighbor, for instance, I don't know that I've seen a political speech at a convention where people talk about their neighbors as much as Tim Walz did. And it occurred to me that was the way you used to hear Republicans try to connect with people at conventions. The 92 convention, which I remember very distinctly, this contrast they were trying to draw about ordinary people. And that's gone from the GOP.
Yeah, it feels like the Democrats have really taken the centerist, the patriotic, the, you know, we are the proud Americans. We love our neighbors. We love our friends. We respect everyone. That mantle is now firmly wrapped around the Democratic Party in a way that it never has been before. Mm.
So, Andrea, does that mean for you a vote for Harris Walz is possible? Is that what you're hearing from other Republicans who feel and think the way you do?
Yeah, so it's funny. I actually had a column published in the Detroit Free Press this morning, lining up how Kamala Harris can win my vote. Mm. 5 points, and one of them is just being normal and not being weird. You know, maybe that's a Democrat talking point right now, not being weird. But the reality is, I just want someone who is not going to fall into that personal politics trap where it's all around one man and in a sort of sycophantic way. One thing that has been really clear, it was especially clear last night when we heard from the almost VP nominees, you know, you had Buttigieg up there, you had Wes Moore. Mm-hmm. They were able to tell their stories in a really unique way. Loved what Secretary Buttigieg, which is really hard to not call him Mayor Pete, but he is such a gifted storyteller.
Yes.
Telling his, you know, for lack of a better term, very traditional home life with his husband and their kids and just trying to get macaroni and cheese on the table. But then you have the twist to where he's a happily married gay man, which, you know, 99% of that story would apply to 99% of Republicans that are considering voting. And then, you know, there's this, oh, hey, and by the way, you know, my husband and I have been married for 6 years. So it's a very, very good story from him to be up there. And Wes Moore talking about his military service.
Sure.
It was just a great patriotic pro-America feeling event. I can just get back to something that Mr. Zogby brought up.
Uh-huh.
So the real heart and soul of any political convention is that you are there especially to support the candidate.
Yes.
And what the uncommitted movement has done over the past 3 or 6 months has been interrupt President Biden, Vice President Harris. And if I was planning the convention, it would be very hard for me to reward interrupting behavior on a scale where they are going to be on national TV. You know, in Romulus, we saw after Vice President Harris had met with folks, there was still an interruption at the airport rally.
Yeah.
So I would imagine, as the convention committee and the party planners were already, you know, moving towards what a new convention was going to look like. I mean, you have to imagine the Biden convention was going to be a little bit dour, little bit sober.
Yeah.
They had to move to this uplifting, powerful, you know, happy event, and they didn't want to take the risk of having someone disrupt the conversation in a way that wouldn't be 100% behind Vice President Harris.
That's a really interesting way to think about that, and I'm sure that was part of the calculus. Okay, we actually have to take a quick break. I want to thank James Zogby for being with us. I know you've got to run at 9:30.
I'd like to respond to that if I could.
Yeah, quickly. We've got about a minute. You can go ahead.
They had talked about the speaker. They had talked about someone who has known Vice President Harris since she was in San Francisco, and who was agreeing to be scripted. They just wanted their humanity affirmed. They weren't there to disrupt. They were there in the same way that the Israeli family was there, to simply tell their story. And you can't call that Israeli family story uplifting. It wasn't. It moved people to tears. Mm. The woman who wanted to speak about the issue of Gaza wasn't going to disrupt. She was going to speak about how she was confident that Vice President Harris understood. This was an error. It shouldn't have happened, and it would have been to her benefit, the campaign's benefit, to have made this space
included
possible.
That. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
okay.
James, I really appreciate you being here. I know you got to
sure,
run.
Thank you.
We're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, we're gonna continue talking with Andrea Beitley and Chika Dalmia about the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. We want to get going with you, the listeners, as well, on the phones and on social. Give us a call. How much are you paying attention to what's happening in Chicago? What did you think of Tim Walz's speech last night, connecting with people about neighbors and freedom? We're going to talk more about that as well. 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Created Equal, or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Welcome back to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and today we're talking about what the Democrats are doing in Chicago this week. We are on day four of their national convention, where they are nominating Kamala Harris, who's the Vice President of the United States, and Tim Walz, who's the Governor of Minnesota, to be their candidates on the 2024 presidential ticket. We're talking about what we've learned so far in the first 3 days of speeches and activity at the convention, and what we might expect as we get ready to hear from Vice President Harris as she addresses delegates. We've got two really great guests with us right now. Andrea Beitley is the former spokesperson for former Michigan Attorney General Bill Schuette, and is currently a political and communication strategist at Beitley Communications. Also with us is Chika Dalmia. She is the president of the Institute for the Study of Modern Authoritarianism. She's also editor-in-chief of the free Substack publication, The Unpopulist. We want to hear from you as well. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Call and tell us what you make of the case that the Democrats are making to the American people this week. How much are you watching? Have any of the speeches moved you? We saw twin speeches from Michelle Obama and Barack Obama earlier this week, both pretty biting criticisms of what they've seen on the other side of the aisle, but also really pointed at the idea of uplifting, the idea of a different approach to government, to culture, to all the things that we really cherish here as Americans. Did those speeches move you? Did Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota, who really introduced himself to the nation last night, what did you think of how he did that, the things he said, but also the way in which he was trying to connect with people? Again, 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. I want to start this segment with a little bit of the speech that Tim Walz gave last night in Chicago, a passage that I think really captures something the Democrats are trying to do, to define freedom in a really different way than we have seen Republicans try to define it in recent years. Let's take a listen.
Because this is a big part about what this election is about. Freedom. When Republicans use the word freedom, they mean that the government should be free to invade your doctor's office. Corporations, free to pollute your air and water. And banks, free to take advantage of customers. But when we Democrats talk about freedom, we mean the freedom to make a better life for yourself and the people that you love. Freedom to make your own healthcare decisions. And yeah, your kids' freedom to go to school without worrying about being shot dead in the hall.
That was Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and the vice presidential nominee on the Democratic side speaking at the Democratic National Convention yesterday in Chicago about what freedom means to Republicans and what freedom means to him and the Democrats. Sheikha Dalmia, you and I have had many conversations over recent years about freedom and what it means and the way that we're defining it in our country. I wonder what you make of Tim Walz's expression of that contrast between what Republicans mean when they talk about it and what Democrats mean when they speak about it.
Good to be back, Stephen.
Yes.
We have had many such conversations. And yeah, you know, I think so far, Democrats have a very hard task before them, and they've done it just about as well as they could. Hmm. And I'll get to that in a second. But you know, to Andrea's point, they've stolen the message of patriotism from Republicans, right? But they have also stolen the message of freedom from Republicans. And given a meaning to freedom that is intuitive and moral in a way that the Republican conception of freedom right now does not strike people as such. So Republicans consider freedom to be the freedom to suppress other people's lifestyle choices, you know, whether it is gays or childless cat ladies or, you know, other things that individuals want to do. Whereas Democrats are zeroing in on individual freedom, which is really quite remarkable. Now, you can quibble with Tim Walz's, you know, all the various talking points he listed in his conception of freedom. But the fact is that they want to empower individuals to live full, flourishing lives as they choose them. And that is extremely powerful. And they have attached that message to patriotism because freedom is a quintessential American concept. So from a messaging standpoint, I think, you know, they are doing this very, very right. But, you know, Democrats have a structural disadvantage that Republicans don't. The structural disadvantage is that they have to win far more of the popular vote in order to elect a Democratic president. And Republicans can lose the popular vote and still get elected because of
the election. Yeah, we've seen that happen twice in the last 24 years.
Exactly. Yeah. You've seen that happen twice. And, you know, there have been two times in this century when Republicans lost the popular vote and still won the presidency. And that has consequences for how the two parties are playing out their strategies, right? Republicans are basically you know, driving down on their base. They are not trying to really broaden their coalition. Mm. They are simply trying to appeal to a very, you know, right-wing base, whereas Democrats have to expand their coalition. They have to expand it in every way, not just ethnically, but religiously. and also appeal to independence in, you know, in a way that maybe Republicans do not. And you are seeing this play out on the stage at the Democratic National Convention. Their message of Democrats is inclusiveness. Their message is, you're okay, I'm okay. They are trying to appeal to various religious and minority constituencies. And what is really striking to me about their strategy is that they are actually, you know, talking about class more than identity, I think, which is one reason they did not, you know, I really did appreciate James' point about the absence of, you know, an Arab American speaker who could speak to the plight of what's happening in Gaza. And I wish they had taken that small risk. But what they really are trying to do is, you know, build a very inclusive, broad, harmonious coalition to bring out, you know, vast array of voters as opposed to Republicans.
So one of the things that I also noticed about Tim Walz's speech last night was after he said what he did about freedom, drawing those two contrasts between the parties, you know, he ended on this idea that, you know, your kid should be free to go to school without being shot dead in the hall. And then he went on to talk about guns and gun rights. And he made, I thought, a really interesting point about the Second Amendment that, you know, like he's a gun owner, you know, he's a hunter. But you know, he sees that right in a way that that's different from Republicans, that it's not unlimited and that it's got to be kind of constrained by safety. And I thought that was a you know, almost a brilliant stroke in the sense of trying to take again away from Republicans an issue that they have kind of owned for a long time and put it in Democratic terms to say we're not trying to take people's guns away for no reason, but we are trying to do it where safety is kind of paramount.
Yeah, no, I thought that was, you know, brilliant. I think the brilliance of picking Walz is that culturally he's very close to the median voter, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. He is pro-choice, but not in a shrill way. He's pro-guns, but in a sensible, you know, common sense way. You know, he is, you know, pro-gay, but it's not like, you know, he's just sort of naturally inclusive. He's not carrying that as a signature issue, right? So he is positioning himself on all these cultural issues in a way that any median voter can relate to him. He's the normie. He's just this decent guy who extends his humanity to everybody, which, you know, is not only a good political message, but I think this is a message that this country sorely needs right now. Mm-hmm. And I think they are, you know, their strategy is to get to the median voter, to get as many voters out, as many independents and swing voters out, and let Republicans try to just drill down on their base strategy to get their, you know, core constituencies out.
I want to play one more clip from Tim Walz's speech about freedom and the way that Democrats are trying to frame it before we move on. Let's hear what he says about reproductive freedom.
We also protected reproductive freedom because in Minnesota, we respect our neighbors and the personal choices they make. And even if we wouldn't make those same choices for ourselves, we've got a golden rule. Mind your own damn business.
Mind your own business, Tim Walz says. Andrea Bightley, you know, I think a lot about the 92 Republican convention, which was really the first time that the lean into the culture war aspect of the party was on display, and in particular, the speeches by people like Pat Buchanan and Marilyn Quayle, who was the wife of the vice presidential candidate. You know, the things that they were saying about about Americans and the divisions that we have. It was such a contrast to the way that someone like Walz is talking about it now. I mean, he's still talking about division, but he's talking about it in a broader and more inclusive way, I kind of feel like.
Yeah, he's doing it in a very pragmatic and, for lack of a better term, Midwestern way. Mm-hmm. He appeals to this broad swath of us sort of in the middle, with the way he speaks, the way he carries himself, the way he's getting back to that neighbor statement, you know, yeah, you know, my neighbor's got a different political sign or a different view on things, but, you know, we still agree to shovel the driveways together. That sort of respectful disagreement is where Tim Walz is going with many of his comments. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have a gun, but you can also have a lock on it and keep it in a safe place. Mm-hmm. It's very, very Midwestern.
Yeah.
It's also just common sense, right?
Yes. Well, common sense in the Midwest is what we do, right?
So how we carry ourselves.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what Tim Walz said specifically about what Vice President Kamala Harris and he would do if they were elected in November. The part of the speech where he said, here's what our plans look like. I was waiting for that a long time last night. I think everyone is anticipating Kamala Harris talking more about it tonight. We'll listen to what he said, get our guests to react, and of course, get to you, the listeners on the phones and on social. If you want to join us, 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. And you can go to Twitter, hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. More Created Equal from WDET in Detroit, and we're talking about the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. It is day 4 for the Democrats to make their case to the American people about Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, why they believe they should be the president and vice president after the November election. We've got two great guests with us talking about it. Chika Dalmia is the president of the Institute for the Study of Modern Authoritarianism. Also is the editor-in-chief of the free Substack publication, The Unpopulist. Also with us is Andrea Bightley. She is the former spokesperson for former Michigan Attorney General Bill Schuette and is currently a political and communication strategist at Bightley Communications. Want to hear from you as well on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. I want to start this segment with a quote from or a clip from Tim Walz's speech last night in Chicago, where he talked about specifically the things that Harris and he would do if they were elected president and vice president in November.
So here, this is the part, clip and save it and send it to your undecided relatives so they know. If you're a middle-class family or a family trying to get into the middle class, Kamala Harris is going to cut your taxes. If you're getting squeezed by prescription drug prices, Kamala Harris is going to take on Big Pharma. If you're hoping to buy a home, Kamala Harris is going to help make it more affordable. And no matter who you are, Kamala Harris is going to stand up and fight for your freedom to live the life that you want to lead. Because that's what we want for ourselves, and it's what we want for our neighbors.
There's that word again, neighbors. He used it over and over in his speech last night. But, you know, this was really the part of the speech I was waiting for. just to get them to be more specific about, hey, here's what we do in the White House if you elect us. Andrea Beitley, as you pointed out, you've got an op-ed in the Detroit Free Press today talking about what Democrats could do to win your vote as a Republican in November. I wonder what you made of that part of the speech where Tim Walz says, here are some of our policy priorities. It wasn't too specific, but it was aimed at the things that I think are on voters' minds.
Yeah, it was definitely aimed at what's on voters' minds. And it was aimed at what is on the generic moderate, potentially undecided now that there's a new Democrat candidate. It's on that group of folks' minds. You know, those of us who are more deeply thoughtful on politics have been sort of wondering what Kamala Harris is going to do that's different than Joe Biden. And the reality is we still don't really know. One thing that in the past, this was a Hillary Clinton, Mitt Romney, several others were really big into the policy papers. And those aren't voter defining positions. Mm-hmm. But what I would like to see from Vice President Harris is how she is going to do some of these economic proposals. I mean, it's really great to talk about tax cuts for the middle class. Mm-hmm. Majority of us are middle class, middle Americans, you know, having a little extra money in the pocket's a nice thing. But how is she going to make it easier to buy a home? How is she going to make drug companies be held more accountable? What does that mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm curious as to what her statements will be tonight and what her campaign will roll out over the next few weeks to explain those feelings and policy positions.
I mean, obviously, there's got to be a lot more detail to come, and you can't do it in a convention speech. But if she were to focus on those things over the next few weeks, how important do you think, Andrea, that would be to you and maybe to independent voters and other Republicans who are just not ready to vote for Donald Trump?
Yeah, I think they're hugely important. Explaining how you're going to put more money back into a voter's pocket is huge. Millennials, Gen Z are really struggling to make that one huge lifetime investment, buying a house. It's a giant change mm-hmm. in what previous generations. I mean, baby boomers were able to buy homes at 20. Gen X was able to buy homes at 30. Mm-hmm. Millennials are looking at, you know, if they're in a large city, you know, 35, 40 before they can even save enough for a down payment. How is the Harris-Walz administration going to change that? How are we going to change the way student loans are done? There's so much that could motivate the typically unmotivated younger people to actually go out and vote. I mean, yeah. We have such a small number of people that aren't already committed to voting for the Democrats or the Republicans. It's really just getting people who weren't going to vote to go vote.
Yeah, yeah. Shiga, what do you make of what Tim Walz said about those priorities and, you know, the detail that we're probably still waiting for here?
Yeah, so, you know, what was most interesting to me was not just what he said, but what he didn't say, right? So he did not focus on things like anything to do with identity politics, criminal justice reform, Black Lives Matter, social justice, you know, any of that. And there's a reason for that. Those issues are culture war issues and they are inherently divisive. So he worked on an economic message. He emphasized you know, the kinds of bread and butter issues that are on the voters' minds, as Andrea said. The question, so I think the priorities are great politically. I think those are exactly the kinds of goals that they should be aiming for if they want to win. The devil, of course, is in the details and the means that they are going to use. Now, I think Kamala Harris was off to a really terrible start on this when she started last week about price controls and, you know, other really statist means to try and deliver, you know, middle results for middle class Americans. They are already moderating that. And you could hear Tim Walz moderate. And not just Tim Walz, but it was very interesting, even in President Obama's speech, when he talked about the shortage of housing, when he talked about housing prices, mm-hmm. he talked about the shortage in housing and increasing the supply of housing.
Right.
I think that's the kind of thing that is going to be comforting to a lot of median voters who are afraid of big government and socialism and, you know, those kinds of things. So I think they are getting their messaging right on economic issues, and I hope they don't go back into this extreme, you know, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders kind of space and start talking about, you know, start demonizing industries unnecessarily. They do go after big pharma. Okay, fine. But they really should moderate that.
I couldn't agree more with you, Shika. Last night I was watching the PBS feed and they interviewed Elizabeth Warren, and I cringed the entire time she was on. But then they had sorry, Stephen. They had Jared Polis from Colorado,
yeah.
and he was a breath of fresh air to me
yes.
as their next interview. And he was specifically asked, you know, what has been your take so far? And he said, it's been much more progressive than where I feel America is. Mm. So more Jared Polis, less Elizabeth Warren, and you'll win over more middle ground.
Talk about freedom while mm-hmm. unleashing the state on...
Well, but the state has a role to play in these things.
Oh, sure.
And I'll give you an example. So Mike Duggan was asked this week about Kamala Harris and what he thought of her rather than Joe Biden, given especially, you know, the things that the Biden administration has done specifically to help things here in Detroit. And he pointed to the down payment assistance program that we've had here in Detroit for a while, which gives $25,000 to people who are buying houses that are worth $125,000 or less. There's about 450 people, by the way, who have benefited from that, who are now homeowners and who were not before. He talked about how, you know, Kamala Harris brought this up when he talked to her and said that she wanted to make that part of her platform, part of her approach to lowering that barrier that we were just talking about that people feel to buying homes. Well, that's the state playing a role, but it's not the state telling you what to do or interfering in your life. And I think there's a way to balance those things.
So in the Democratic Party, there are two factions on economic issues. One is the abundance faction, and the other is, you know, the old sort of regulatory, you know, let's see how the state can mess with the decisions of producers faction. And the abundance faction, which is a faction that, you know, I wholeheartedly support, is you know, it's not opposed to state action when it is required,
yeah.
but it is, but what it doesn't want is wholesale relief for instance, the student loan program, right? That Biden wants to excuse student loans, and he used executive powers to do that. And that helps everybody, regardless of whether you need it or not. So some kind of targeted interventions to those who really need it, you know, I think will play well with voters. But if they go whole hog draconian, calling out on, you know, price gouging industries and, you know, price controls, which have a really lamentable history wherever they've been tried, including when President Nixon, a Republican, you know, imposed them back in the 70s, and Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, had a real problem with them.
Yeah. I mean, those kinds of extreme ideas is what I'm talking about, Stephen, when it comes to kind of like the statist versus an abundance approach to economics.
Quickly, before we have to end, I want to hear what each of you are anticipating you hear from Kamala Harris today. What do you need to hear from her? Andrea, I'll start with you.
I'm anticipating that we hear something about her childhood, how she was brought up, her story,
mm-hmm.
and then move into her policy accomplishments and owning what she sees as her vision for the next 4 or I guess maybe 8 years as president, and doing more again to appeal to that slim minority of people who have not yet made up their minds on who they're voting. Yeah. But also, she's really got to rally the troops. So I honestly am going to, I'm sort of anticipating a really standardized stump speech of excitement and happiness.
Yeah.
But I could be surprised.
Yeah. Chica, what do you think we're going
to
hear?
So what I'm really hoping is that she tries to change the narrative on immigration, which is an issue really important to me, and starts talking about immigrants as assets and not rapists and criminals and liabilities the way Donald Trump does.
Yeah.
And for me personally, if she tells her story about how this child of two immigrants from shithole countries has made it to
has
where
gotten
she
to be the vice president.
And potentially the president. That to me would be poetic justice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Andrea and Chica, always great to talk with you. Thanks for being here with us. All right. That's going to do it for us on Created Equal. Remember to hit our listener survey at WDET.org. This is the last day. Tell us what you think about all the programming here on Detroit's Public Radio.